Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during April. This past winter here in New England, my yard had snow cover continuously from early December through March. And as you listen to this, the white stuff is likely still lingering from a storm on April Fool's Day. So I'm champing at the bit for a little spring warmth, and at last it's here. For most of the U.S., yes, even here in Boston, April evenings are finally warm enough to linger outdoors comfortably for quite a while. And that's a good thing because you'll want to stay out at least for 15 to 30 minutes to give your eyes a chance to adapt to the darkness. During most of April, the sun sets between 7:30 and 8, and by 9 p.m. it's good and dark. So while your eyes are getting adjusted, let me tell you that right now amateur sky watchers around the world are celebrating Global Astronomy Month. The organizers have a terrific schedule of activities lined up, some involving outdoor observing and some for watching over the internet. For more information, type Global Astronomy Month into any web search engine. Okay, let's check out the major landmarks, sky marks, that you'll see overhead this month. New moon falls on April 3rd, and full moon is on the night of the 17th. So most of the moonless skies, the ones best for stargazing, will come toward month's end. Looking west, you'll see Orion the Hunter, whose body and belt are studded with bright stars. To his left is dazzling Sirius, marking the collar of Canis Major, the big dog. And to his right is Aldebaran, the fiery eye of Taurus, the bull. You can use Orion to observe the two ways that stars move around in your sky. The first is due to Earth's 24-hour-long spin. Find an obvious landmark along the western horizon and note Orion's position with respect to it at, say, 8 p.m. Then check up on him an hour later, and you'll see that he's obviously lower down. To see the second kind of motion, again note where Orion is at a particular time, and then check again at the same time 2 weeks later. Orion is once again farther down, but this time the cause is Earth's movement around our Sun. Our orbital position shifted over those 2 weeks, and so did Orion's location in the evening sky. While you're looking westward, do you notice anything that's missing? Gone is brilliant Jupiter, which dominated the western sky all through the long, cold, snowy, never-ending northern winter. On April 6th, this king of planets will be directly on the far side of the sun from us, or in conjunction, as astronomers call it, completely overwhelmed by twilight's glare and invisible to the eye. In a few weeks, it'll be popping back up into view before sunrise, low in the east. So with Jupiter in absentia, Saturn is the lone bright planet gracing April evening skies. Saturn is at opposition, that is, opposite the sun in the sky, on April 4th. So when the sun sets in the west, Saturn will be rising in the east, and it'll take all night to cross the sky. This time of opposition is also when Earth and Saturn are closest together in space, and so the ringed planet is its shiniest right now. Now don't confuse Saturn with the star Spica, almost the same brightness, which is below Saturn by about the width of your clenched fist held in arm's length. As you watch the two of them, Saturn might look creamy in color compared to Spica's icy white. Also, Saturn is about 800 million miles distant, which I'll admit is more than my daily commute, but Spica is about 2 million times farther away. The very bright star about three fists to Saturn's left is Arcturus. If you let your gaze drift upward from Saturn and a bit to the right, not quite to overhead, you'll come across Regulus, the brightest star in the constellation Leo. Regulus sits at the bottom of a star pattern called the sickle because it looks like the hand tool with a curved blade used for harvesting crops. Regulus is at the bottom of the handle. Or maybe you'll see it more easily if you look for a question mark facing the wrong way. It's all about the size of your fist at arm's length. In any case, the stars of the sickle trace out the head of Leo. Regulus marks the lion's heart, and its body extends off to the left. Now look to the right of Leo by about four fists, and you'll find a fairly bright star kind of on its own. That's Procyon, marking the constellation Canis Minor, the little dog. Look upward about two fists from there to spot Castor and Pollux, the head stars for the twins of Gemini. These two stars, together with Procyon and Regulus, enclose a big triangle of sky that appears fairly empty, but really it's not. The triangle's center marks the location of Cancer, the crab. This constellation isn't very big, and it doesn't have any bright stars, but here's where you'll find a nifty star cluster called the Beehive. In a dark sky free of light pollution or strong moonlight, the cluster looks like a soft glow. Binoculars will reveal dozens of individual stars. Okay, now you're facing south, more or less, so turn around so you're facing north, more or less, and look high up. You'll immediately recognize our old friend the Big Dipper, positioned with its bowl at upper left and its handle curving toward lower right. According to old farmer's lore, it's upside down, as if dumping April showers. But wait a sec, how can it be dumping showers if the sky is clear? Anyway, the two stars at the end of the Dipper's bowl are known as the pointer stars because an imaginary line down through them points almost directly at Polaris, the North Star. It's below the pointers by the width of three fists. Polaris marks the handle end of the notoriously dim Little Dipper, which on spring evenings extends to Polaris's right. If you follow the pointers up instead of down, you'll soon run into Regulus. Now, the Big Dipper isn't a true constellation. It's what astronomers call an asterism, an obvious group of stars. The Sickle is an asterism, too. But the Big Dipper is part of a constellation, Ursa Major, which is Latin for the Big Bear. And the Little Dipper is in Ursa Minor, which means, you guessed it, the Little Bear. Now, if you think about it, bears come out of hibernation in the spring. And so the Big Bear is now on the prowl high in the northeast. Equally high to its right is Leo the lion. Okay, lions don't hibernate, but we're talking mythology here. Now, if you think about it, bears come out of hibernation in spring. And so the Big Bear is now on the prowl high in the northeast. Equally high to its right is Leo the lion. Okay, lions don't hibernate, but we're talking mythology here. And slithering up equally high in the southeast is long, winding Hydra, the sea serpent, a completely mythological creature. Hydra's stars are all pretty dim. Well below Regulus is Alphard, which forms the serpent's fiery orange heart. Its head is farther right, over in the southwest, and its long tail has yet to clear the southeastern horizon. Hydra was quite carnivorous in Homer's Odyssey, and you can think of it as a hibernator if you want. So, spring is coming, and all of these sky critters are on the march. For more sky watching tips, check out skyandtelescope.com. Until we meet again here next month, I wish you clear skies.